Welcome to episode 12 of All the Small Takes, presented by our new sponsors and owners, the Disney Corporation. We were purchased, we were acquired last week to replace the 100 or so ESPN staffers that were let go. So you'll be happy to know that the content is going to take a serious nosedive.
Yeah, if only.
Are we allowed to say that?
No, we're not legally saying anything.
So. All right, thanks for the legal advice.
No legal advice.
But in all seriousness, if any one of those 100 or so ESPN personalities wants to come on like an upstart, up-and-coming, energetic, fun-loving podcast, you know where to find us, which is on Twitter at Small Takes, Instagram, @small_takes, Facebook, All the Small Takes, and Gmail, allthesmalltakes@gmail.com. We've got a jam-packed show this week. We have some NFL draft reactions. We're going to do a Fire 4, which we haven't done in a couple of weeks. But did you guys want to quickly talk about the ESPN layoffs? Because that was some big news last week, and there were some names that were pretty surprising to see go.
Yeah, I was really surprised that ESPN fired Jason Stark, who's, I think, one of the best baseball commentators, best baseball news guys in the business right now. And that's, I mean, it's gonna be a real bummer. And then of course the fact that they fired their entire hockey department and like most of their Big Ten reporting department. I mean, it's not really surprising because ESPN hates hockey, but very sad. Sad to see that because hockey's great. Go Flyers, go Blackhawks.
Go Blackhawks? What?
It's my sister. Yeah, she's a Blackhawks fan.
I don't know if this is gonna work out.
Yeah, I don't know. Kind of interesting. I think that Mark May got let off.
Oh.
Especially because they're, you know, ESPN's priorities, especially with college football, seem to, you know, lie with the SEC. And seeming, you know, Mark May is, I think, hated by all Big Ten fans.
So and all Notre Dame fans.
Yeah, so I think that was a little shocking.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that Mark May had been let go until Cooper told us right before we came on air. But I was also surprised to see Jason Stark go. He's one of the better baseball guys. I don't think it was too much of a surprise that they cut all the hockey folks, because if you've been watching ESPN for the last like 5 years, you might have forgotten hockey was even a sport that's played in America. But it is too bad, and in all honesty, it does stink to see people losing positions in sports media. But lots of those people will land on their feet, I'm sure, maybe at this podcast. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows?
So anyway, last week, if you tuned in, we had the first ever All the Small Takes mock draft, the 1.11 mock draft. Do you guys know how many picks we got right? I didn't go back and check. I didn't really want to see the carnage.
I got the Jaguars pick right. Leonard Fournette to the Jaguars. I'm very, very proud of that one. Really locked in with the Jacksonville crowd. I've got two younger correspondents that let me know how the Jags are doing normally.
What is your Jacksonville connect? Because you've mentioned Blake Bortles on this podcast before, too.
I have a familial connection to Jacksonville. I've got some nieces who are Jacksonville fans, as well as a sister and brother-in-law who are Jacksonville fans. They're good
That's
people. Jacksonville's it's not. Jacksonville's a great city. It's where the Eagles went to their most recent Super Bowl.
Well, so throw some thoughts and prayers out for them.
T's and P's.
It's great. It's great. If you're in Jacksonville, go catch a Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp game. One of America's premier minor league baseball teams.
It's a great name. That is a great name. In this week's installment of John Remembers Obscure Minor League Baseball team names. Cooper, wait, there was one other pick. I think you were the one that got it right. Yes?
No.
You traded the pick to me, and I expertly picked Myles Garrett. That's right.
Yeah, that was right.
So we were 2 for 12 on our picks.
I mean, the Browns didn't have as bad of a draft as they are known for having, but I do think that my outcome was a little bit better for them. But that's okay. Whatever.
I think I should get an honorable mention for not rising to the bait as the Bears and making a horrific draft choice. I had the opportunity to trade for several picks with the Bears, and I turned them down. And I think I got a very, very solid draft that most Bears fans would prefer to the current one.
I don't know if that's true, if you saw the reception that Mitch Trubisky got at the Bulls game this weekend. But we'll get to that here in a minute, because we are going to do a little bit of a recap, and we're going to smash together a segment and a topic. We're going to do our one up, one down, which you may have heard before, but we're going to do that with the NFL draft. And so we're just going to give one winner, one loser. You may have heard this before on other shows, but this is totally different. Different.
Brand new.
Yeah. Brand new, brought to you by All the Small Takes and the Disney Corporation. So we will start with Cooper. Cooper, what is your down?
All right, so downs first.
Yeah, we'll do downs first.
Awesome, love that. All right, so I'm just going to say like non-New Year's Day bowls for college football. I think this kind of this draft with the fact that Fournette and McCaffrey were drafted really high, did not play, you know, decided to sit on the sidelines for their team's bowls, forego the risk of injury. They almost got rewarded for that, whereas you had certain players like Jake Butt, who I think was an incredible – I mean, if you watched him play this year for Michigan at tight end position, was incredibly talented. And this was a tight end-heavy draft where the tight ends got rewarded in this draft. And I thought he was probably one of the best ones. He fell to the fifth round because he got hurt in the bowl bowl game. And so I think that's just – I don't – in the future, I just kind of see if you're a player, why are you playing in a bowl game if it doesn't matter? I mean, if you think you're going to be a first-round pick, it just doesn't really seem to be worth it. We could also even go back to last year with Jalen Smith, gets drafted by the Cowboys in the second round, and he was a top 10 talent. And that was the Fiesta Bowl. Like, that was a big bowl game. But so maybe that one, I don't know. Yeah, I just kind of think the bowl game's lost. I don't know if they can be losers, but they are.
That's fair. And part of maybe the underlying problem is that there's so many bowl games now. Mm-hmm. Like last year, they couldn't even find sponsors for some of the lower tier ones. So maybe as an up, maybe this will ultimately spark them to maybe reduce the number of bowl games, but money also talks. John, what is your down?
Yeah, my down is going to be a little bit more draft related and a little more boring. I mean, if you followed any post-draft coverage, I think you've probably realized that nobody thinks the Bears did a good job. And I think that just needs to be underscored. But I think it needs to be underscored for a different reason than most people are saying, which is that the 49ers hoodwinked them. The reason the Bears did such a bad job was because they overreached for a quarterback, which is what everybody does in the NFL draft time after time after time. They overreach for quarterbacks. And the reality is a quarterback isn't going to change your franchise. Andrew Luck will change your franchise, but Andrew Luck isn't going to get drafted every year. He's not going to get drafted every 5 years. He's not going to get drafted every 10 years. These guys know that. They're professional talent evaluators. No one in this draft was a super amazing quarterback who needed to go in the top three or the top five or even the top seven, but some guys did. And I think that as long as NFL teams keep chasing after this bizarro land quarterback thing, which I think is driven by the NFL pundits who just like to say quarterback ad infinitum until, you know, like they vomit. That's dumb. And I'm glad that the Browns forewent that. And I think that's a win for humanity when that happens.
So just to circle back, your down was the Bears after all of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, my down was the Bears because they're not being intelligent and being aware.
I was going to like say something to you, but then I got this picture of Mel Kiper throwing up after saying quarterback five times in a row. And so I lost my train of thought.
I thought of Chris Berman, you know, back, 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 back. I thought quarterback, 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 quarterback. That's where my head went.
Oh, good to know, guys.
But I'm a baseball guy. My down is going to be in stark contrast to John's. So regardless of how you feel about the Browns pick, not the Browns pick, the Bears pick, what happened with Mitch Trubisky at the Bulls game, which if you didn't see it, they showed him on the Jumbotron of the Bulls game, and he was booed pretty like soundly and pretty unanimously by the crowd. And I saw folks saying, well, they weren't booing him. They were booing the ownership and they were booing the general manager. But that's not how you express your frustration with ownership and with management. This is a guy who has just had the most important day of his life. He just fulfilled his dream of becoming an NFL quarterback. And he's excited to be there. Clearly, like he's in Chicago already supporting another team in the city. And you're going to boo him? Like not even Philly fans would do that. That was just, to me, so classless, regardless of what the intended message was, which I don't buy that you can have an intended message when an arena full of people are just booing one guy. But that was sad. And that was disappointing to see because regardless of how you feel, John, about that pick, like that was pretty painful to see that happen to like a 20-year-old kid.
Oh yeah, no, I think that's terrible. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's the terrible reality of how our society has gone, where we're all, you know, anonymous and we feel like we can do whatever we want, and we feel like we can, you know, boo people and jeer at them. And this was the issues I had at Notre Dame going to Notre Dame games, was when the student section would boo when Tommy Rees would step on the field.
Yes, same thing.
And I hated it. few things, nothing else. Like Brian Kelly deciding to go for two when he should just be kicking a field goal, or being not teaching his players how to hold a ball so that we can kick a field goal. Things like that. I did not get as upset about that as I did. Absolutely no reason would boo Tommy Rees. And it's like, this guy is out here. He's wearing our colors. He's representing us. And you're going to go ahead and boo him. Great. Wonderful. I love how that reflects on us.
Does anyone else think that John has side bets on whether or not people can cross off different sections on the bingo board?
John, are you fixing matches on our podcast?
Now, I would like to point out that I restrained myself and did not mention hyper-consumerism earlier.
I know. I could feel it. Going down that route. You're playing at home. That was probably what we had Notre Dame. We had hyper-consumerism. It's at least two steps.
Well, but there's no Notre Dame homerism. I did mention Notre Dame, but it was actually a critique. It was a critique.
No.
Fair and balanced.
No spin zone. Can we use that now?
Oh, I think we can.
I don't think anyone's using it.
I think we can maybe squat on that copyright, actually.
Oh, gosh. We should cut this out of the podcast.
No, we shouldn't. This is great. Let's do our ups really quickly, because we want to get to our way too early mock draft as well. So, Cooper, what's your up
in the draft? Panthers. All right, picking Christian McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel in the first two rounds. Literally the same exact player, and some people might call this idiotic. I think it's brilliant because they can line up in a bunch of different formations and do a bunch of bizarre, wacky stuff. They can pretty much play every single position on offense except on the line. Allows for a lot of creative possibilities. Whether or not they use them is a whole nother conversation. But that offense went from being incredibly vanilla with Olsen and Benjamin just being two very tall guys to getting these two, I think, very elite offensive playmakers.
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey's really shifty, you might say. Kind of like a real, like, nose to the grindstone, gritty kind of guy.
Like, bring your lunch pail to work kind of guy?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, wear, like, an oversized helmet kind of guy?
Almost a neck roll guy.
Because you're like, oh, okay. I thought we were going with the oversized helmet because we're prone to concussion kind of guy.
Oh.
Yeah.
That took a dark turn.
Future Patriot.
Exactly. All right, John, what's your art?
I'm going to give a little tip of the cap to the Browns because they very easily could have ruined their draft, but they restrained themselves and I think I actually had a great draft. But my up goes to the team who I think is positioned best to win based on what they did in the draft, and I think that's the Texans. I'm a firm believer that the Texans were one piece away this season in terms of being a legitimate contender, and that was a quarterback. They got a quarterback. They got a guy who knows how to win. They got a guy who, from all the external reports, has great character, wants to learn, and is eager to succeed. And with that, I mean, he's got the tool. We watched him in college. He's got the tools to succeed. Deshaun Watson played Alabama twice, beat him the second time around in dramatic fashion. I mean, this guy's got a great resume, and he's got a great coach in Bill O'Brien, who I think when you combine that and maybe – patient with them, hopefully develop him a little. I don't think he's going to step on the field week one. I don't think he should step on the field week one. But I do think the Texans' future's got to be, I mean, everyone's got to be bright. Everyone's got to be buying the Texans, right?
Who does step on the field week one for them then, if not him?
Tom Savage, who sounds like a West Coast, you know, sort of San Diego anchorman, to be perfectly honest. he does play in the NFL.
He should have a, like, kind of bushy mustache.
He needs, like, a Fu Manchu.
He does something.
I wouldn't be surprised if Deshaun Watson started, but we can talk about that later. My up, just quickly to wrap this up, is the Kansas City Chiefs, my hometown Kansas City Chiefs. They drafted Mahomes. They traded up to draft a quarterback. I don't know if I've made this clear or not. We talked about this one maybe early episodes, but I'm not an Alex Smith guy at all. I think it's been pretty clearly established that his ceiling is not going to get you to the Super Bowl. It's not going to give you a Super Bowl caliber offense. And I think Mahomes, while he's very raw and comes from a system at Texas Tech where it's certainly not a pro style offense, he has the tools to become a pro style quarterback. And he's going to be under a coach, Andy Reid, who, for all of his kind of struggles with game management and clock management, actually has proven time and time again to be a great developer of quarterbacks and of offenses. So I like the pick. And I think you'll see Mahomes obviously not starting this year, but in a couple of years, he'll be ready to step into the Chiefs' offensive reins. And as long as Andy Reid can do what he's done with other quarterbacks, I think it's a solid pick for the Chiefs.
See, I kind of disagree with that the slightest bit. I mean, they did They picked a quarterback later in the draft, or later in the first round, which I do like. But I hate the idea that, you know, everyone in the NFL's got in this echo chamber where it's like quarterback, 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 quarterback. You got to pick a quarterback.
I feel like I've heard that before.
You got to pick a quarterback or you're not going to win. And it's ridiculous. He's one guy on the field, and while he is a little more important than the other guys, you can make
a little more important.
Yeah, I think he's a little more important because you can make do with a ton of guys. The Texans won 9 games last year with three different quarterbacks.
Oh, 9 games. Oh, my God. They won nine games.
Hey, three different Patriots quarterbacks. Fan, there are lots of teams who would like to win 9 games, okay?
I know, but I'm saying in today's NFL, that you have to have one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the league or you're not going to be a contender. That's just a fact.
Joe Flacco.
You're not going to get one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the league drafting a quarterback every year. You're going to get a guy who, you know, is probably going to be a lifetime backup or, you know, maybe can start a couple times. But like this idea that like that Mel Kiper and other NFL analysts were shouting at the Browns about, oh, how do you pass on a quarterback like Mitch Trubisky? It's like, look, Mitch Trubisky, he's not knocking anyone's socks off. He's not Andrew Luck. He's not coming out and looking like a sure thing. I mean, he's not Robert Griffin III either, where he comes out and looks like he's going to be amazing. But then, you know, I mean, Robert Griffin had injury problems later on, but I hate this idea that you have to mortgage your future every time any quarterback becomes available.
The Chiefs didn't mortgage their future. It's a risk, but it's a calculated risk. They traded up. They still had a good draft after that. So I like the pick, but I get what you're saying. The Trubisky thing is true. I think this is a very measured risk and there's upside.
Okay. Anyway, well, I really want to move on to what is most important after the draft, which is the way too early 2018 mock draft. I mean, we have to do that, right? Because that's what everyone did today.
Yeah. I think it's the law of having a sports platform of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
A way too early of something.
Yes. And so, Cooper, you had the name for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it has to be the All the Small Takes mock draft 2.21, just so that we can maintain our, you know, some consistency and do 2.22 next year.
Wait, but what happens if we have to put one out in like –
we'll just add another digit.
We'll do 2.205 something. Wait. We'll run the math later.
We'll run it later.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, we each picked 3 guys from next year's draft. I don't know if this is an order thing or if this is just guys we have our eyes on, but 3 guys. Do we want to each do our 3 or we want to go around the table?
Sure, I'll go first. Just taking that one by the horns. Since I know a grand total of like 6 guys who are going to be eligible for the draft next year, I had a very small sample pool to choose from. Sam Darnold is one of them. I think the quarterbacks next year are a lot deeper than the quarterbacks this year. I look specifically at the 49ers and Jets. They need quarterbacks, so I think probably the top 2 at least players taken off the board are probably quarterbacks. Sam Darnold is the best one. I think Josh Rosen's probably second from UCLA, which kind of stinks that both of them are West Coast players because I'm not going to stay up until 2:00 to watch them this year. But they're both good, so we're just going to keep them there. As much as I love Saquon Barkley, I'm actually going to take him out of my original top 3. Unfortunately, I think Leonard Fournette is not going to have as great of a year as Zeke, and it's going to hurt the running back value a little bit. And so Saquon Barkley's not going to be in the top 3. And since everyone else has already mentioned their homer town, I got to pick someone from Ohio State, and therefore going to pick Sam Hubbard, defensive end.
All right. I can do mine next since there's a little bit of overlap between ours. I like Sam Darnold as well, and I'm almost getting into the all the small takes curse danger zone with Sam Darnold because you say like you spoke of some certainty, like he's the best quarterback in this draft. He played like 9 games last year.
Yeah.
Like we really don't know if he's that good, and we've talked about him a lot on this podcast. Relatively,
yeah, we like him too much.
We like him way too much.
Well, I mean, not all of us do. I think he's going to be as good as Tommy Rees, which is pretty darn good. But
if he quit football tomorrow, he would still have a better career than Tommy Rees.
That's objectively not true.
Maybe.
Hold on, I think it is objectively true. Objectively true, he would have a better career than Tommy Rees.
Won a bowl game.
He won on a Rose Bowl.
Tommy Rees won a bowl game.
Okay.
the prestigious Music City Bowl.
I think he won 2. He won 2 bowl games, actually.
The Pinstripe Bowl?
And the Pinstripe
Bowl.
The Sun Bowl. Thank you.
Very prestigious bowls. Not taking those away from Tommy Rees.
You guys were booing him in the stands, weren't you?
No.
You
no. Him.
No.
False.
No.
Fake news. Very dishonest. All right. So I'll do mine, the rest of mine quickly. So Darnold is my number one. Bo Scarborough is my number two, running back out of Alabama. This is solely just based on, largely based on the picture that circulated on the internet last year towards the end of the season of him when he was a sophomore in high school, just looking like an absolute monster. And he is going to be really nasty this year. So my third and final one, to bring it back to some homerism, just like Cooper did with his third, Mike McGlinchey out of Notre Dame, offensive lineman. This year's draft was noticeably light on O-linemen. The pendulum's going to swing the other way next year, and McGlinchey, who is high on a lot of people's boards, should have a good year with the Irish, hopefully, and rock it up, maybe like a top five pick. John.
All right. Well, because I believe there might be some truth behind the all the small takes curse, I'm going to forgo my actual top three because
they were all Notre Dame players.
They were all Notre Dame players. I'll admit that. I'll admit it. And it probably wouldn't take too much work to figure out who they were. And in fact, since I'm not picking them, I'll just say Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson, and Josh Adams. But since I'm not picking them, so it doesn't count as a mention. I'm going to pick. No. That doesn't count. I'm going to go with one actual player and then two players who are, you know, to be named. Because I think
two players you like cricket on that. Like, what are we?
No, because I think it was, I'm going to explain that in a second. But first is Darius Geis from LSU. I think what happens with the NFL draft is we start off with like a consensus number one pick in September, like the first game of the season. And then things happen throughout the year. And then we get to the bowl games, and the number one is now like a number 10. And these other guys who have had good years and who were Heisman finalists have now rocketed up to the top. And then we go into the offseason workouts, and it's like all of a sudden these guys who we've been watching play all year have now become top picks and have totally flipped the order of the draft. Darius Geis, I think, is going to be one of those guys. He was Leonard Fournette's backup at LSU as the running back. And he got a significant amount of playing time this year while Fournette was injured or not playing for whatever reason. And he's an amazing running back, going to be going into Coach O's second year. Coach O, shout out to Coach O. Yes. Coach O's second year at LSU. And he's also going to most likely have a real quarterback throwing the ball this year, which means that defenses can't just stack literally every defender in the box because it's like, well, your quarterback couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. So we're not going to worry about him throwing the ball to anyone. So a lot of talent, and then he's also going to have a much better situation. So I think he's going to be one of those guys that we don't really necessarily know their names in September, but certainly we're going to be talking about in November, and I think is going to be kind of sneaking up by the time we get around to the actual draft. The other two guys, I'm agreeing with Cooper. It's going to be like a resurgence of the O-line this year. And I think it's just going to be, you know, generic Big Ten O-linemen. Because I don't want to say Notre Dame's O-linemen here, who I think one of Notre Dame's captains is, I think, actually one of the best offensive linemen. And I'll get a chance to experience it, to demonstrate it, you know, blocking for Josh Adams. But, you know, generally you can't go wrong if you just grab a Big Ten O-lineman midway through the draft. And I think one of them might actually impress enough to make it into the top three. My third one is SEC running back, because I don't like the idea of taking a quarterback first. And because I think Georgia is going to pump out another running back whose name could be whatever. It could be, I don't know. We've had Chubb and we've had Gurley. So the names don't even matter at this point. You know, you could have a guy named Box and you hand him the ball and he'd be amazing at Georgia.
I don't know if Box is like intimidating enough sounding.
Yeah. I mean, Gurley and Chubb are both very intimidating.
Yeah. He should be like Thick, like Jonathan Thick, or like out Musk. Of the University of Georgia.
I like Musk. Tim Musk. So, yeah, we'll go with Tim Musk or whoever ends the year as a starting running back for Georgia. I think there's someone to watch, someone to look for. So those will be my three guys.
All right. Well, there you have it. Let's jump into our Fire Four this week. We got Fire Four of bad sports towns. This was kind of predicated or teased at earlier in the discussion about the Chicago Bulls, Chicago fans generally, I guess. This is something that John has been wanting to do for a while, though. So, Cooper, who is your fourth worst sports town in America?
Well, I think I should start off by saying that John's been slacking on the whole Word document thing. So, like, I have no idea what to say because typically I like to, you know, antagonize John a little bit.
Ooh.
That's not going to work.
Yeah, flying under the radar this week.
I know, it's not cool. I'm going to go with South Bend. I think after
living
there for 4 years. Yeah, I just think the, you know, kind of stereotypical Notre Dame fan always optimistic that this year is going to be different and that somehow they're going to go from 4-8 to winning a national championship, which seems to defy all sorts of logic. So that would be that. And also, they cling on to Chicago, especially the Cubs, only when the Cubs are good, which has only happened pretty recently, even though they're like an hour and a half away. Like, that's, South Bend is not a suburb of Chicago. Don't claim yourself as one.
See, I think you've got it a little backwards, because the majority of Notre Dame fans, I think, reside actually outside of South Bend, and the majority of them probably reside in the Chicagoland area.
Which is, yeah, sure. But the Chicagoland area is also, like, specified as being, like, 3 hours outside of Chicago.
It's like Iowa. Iowa's in Chicagoland.
And, like, by that logic, that's just nonsense.
No, I get your point. I get your point.
Okay, thank you.
John, who's your number four?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Cooper's clearly not angling for a commencement slot anytime soon, and I think he's forgetting about the ravenous South Bend Cubs fans, formerly South Bend Silverhawks. Shout out minor league baseball. But my number four, and I'm going to predicate my whole list by saying, yeah, I've never been to any of these cities in my life. So it's all based on conjecture. There's no animus here. It's just, you know, stuff I've heard through the grapevine. My number four is going to be Seattle. You know, they drove the Supersonics away. They've embraced Pete Carroll. It's just, those two things, you know, boom, bad sports town.
There's a Pete Carroll box, right? Is there?
There definitely is.
Oh, I forgot about that. There is a Pete Carroll box, I think.
I'm telling you, he made those.
There should be a box, too, because I every time Pete Carroll's name is mentioned, I have to make the comment that he doesn't – the 9/11 truther comment.
He's a weird guy.
I like also, John, how you said, oh, I haven't been to any of these cities, so I can't really speak with, like, an informed opinion, as if any opinions that we have on the show are ever informed.
Yeah, that disclaimer probably wasn't necessary.
Yeah, as if we ever do, like, research. My number four for worst sports towns is Lawrence, Kansas. I don't think we have any listeners from KU. I think most of the hometown listeners that I have are from K-State. So KU, they fall into the blue blood category of basketball fans who think they invented basketball, even though, James Naismith invented basketball. Yeah, yeah.
we'll cut that out.
But they still carry themselves like they did more than invent basketball. It's just the most like arrogant, full of themselves fan base. And then they mysteriously disappear between the months of September and December, as does their football team. So yeah, I'm not fond of that fan base. So if anyone's listening from Lawrence, you can at me on Twitter, because not a fan. All right, let's do number threes.
Yeah, number three, what did I pick? Don't even know. I picked Boston, I think, just because I had to. Someone had to put Boston on there, and Jeff wasn't going to, and I have no idea what John's going to throw out there. So I put Boston as my number three, and I think, as Jeff just demonstrated, there really isn't a ton of logic behind why we hate all the sports cities that we do, but I just do. I do not like Boston. And it's probably just because they're good, and I'm incredibly jealous of them, but I didn't just publicly admit that on a podcast. So I just don't like them. Move on, please.
Great analysis, Cooper.
Mm-hmm. God, what's your number three?
So my number three is, well, all right. Yeah, we're going down this road now. It's Portland. It's
oh no.
I mean, you know, they've got the Trailblazers, and they just like they don't support their teams. Everyone who's played in Portland has left. Not a lot to be said for the Trailblazers. It's not, it rains a lot there, you know, which is bad for sports.
Are we just like critiquing cities now? Because like, I'll put Gary, Indiana on my list if that's what we're doing.
Well, their city name teams. Starts with a P. It's just the worst letter in the alphabet.
Portland. I mean, what does that tell us? It tells us there's a port there. Great. Really descriptive. So, yeah, they're pretty bad.
I will say that I just kind of disagree. I think the Portland Timbers are probably one of my favorite MLS team to watch, and probably the only MLS team that I'm like, I watch every single time, and I would love to actually go to one of their games. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Portland's actually a really good sports town. Like, I think the Blazers actually, their fans are pretty rabid. I think any city that just has one team tends to be that way. But to move this along, my number three is St. Louis. I think John will actually agree with me on this one.
Totally agree.
Ah, good. Look at this. We agreed on something. Sorry, they did lose their football team and probably in a not so fair way. That's fine. But the way their baseball fans act, the self-imposed title of best fans in baseball should tell you everything you need to know about, again, kind of the arrogance and the thinking that they are the greatest fans in baseball. They do have good fans. Like, I'm not, I don't discount that, but to a point yourself, that is kind of comes across as not most humble. So don't like St. Louis as a sports town, pretty much solely for the Cardinals fans.
So I feel obligated to push back a little bit on this because guy lived across from me senior year, good friend, is a Cardinals fan, as is my spiritual director, Cardinals fan. A lot of Dominicans in the city of St. Louis, a lot of Dominican Cardinal fans. And, you know, I've never had a bad experience with Cardinals fans. Maybe I haven't run into enough of them. But, I mean, I'm thinking about the Yankees fans that spat on Cliff Lee's wife. That's pretty bad for baseball. I haven't heard any of these, like, you know, conceited Cardinals stories. So I'm just going to push back a little bit.
They're out there. And I should say, too, so one of our Platinum Star listeners, Carl, shout out Carl, is like the biggest Cardinals fan I know. Going to be the best man at my wedding. Sorry, Carl. Sorry. All right. Let's do our number twos. John, why don't you start us this time?
All right. Well, you might be sensing a pattern, and we're moving in a southwardly direction. Whatever the word is, moving towards the south. And the next city on the list is San Francisco. I hate the Giants. I detest them. And I really, the Niners whole team in general has been toxic for a while, especially since they didn't appreciate Jim Harbaugh. Just blows my mind. When terrible people like Stanford fans can appreciate Jim Harbaugh, I think, you know, anyone else should be able to appreciate him. Yeah, I think that's just horrible. And I think that in itself should sink the city of San Francisco. Additionally, they've been siphoning off some of the best parts of Oakland as well, which I do think is a good sports city. Yeah, that parasitic effect lands San Francisco on this list.
All right, Cooper, what's your number two?
Yeah, mine's also San Francisco. So one of these kind of radical times where I actually agree with John. And I'm also
that should be like
that's a spot on the bingo card.
Yep, I was just gonna say it.
All right, that's so like a
full chug.
So John just won $200. and you can thank me later. I'm starting to notice that the trend on my list is that I'm incredibly jealous of many of these sports teams, sports cities. The Giants are an incredibly successful franchise. So it's kind of one reason why I'm jealous of, I don't know, San Francisco. Also, kind of what John said, siphoning off of Oakland's teams. I would love, I think, to be a Golden State Warriors fan. Their basketball team's incredibly good. I mean, they're probably the luckiest NBA fan right now, getting to watch on a consistent basis two of the top five players in the league play on the same team. And so I'm very kind of just jealous of that talent, and therefore I hate you.
Dude, just do what like 75% of their fan base does and like say you've been a fan forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even need to be from there.
That's true.
Speaking of bandwagon fans, my number two is Miami. I think the iconic image that stands out in my mind is game six of the 2011 finals, I believe. 2011, 2012, whichever one that Ray Allen hit the three in the corner to send it into overtime when the Heat fans who had streamed out of the arena with like 3 minutes left, ran back to the door of the arena only to be told, sorry, you cannot get back in. That's just Miami in a nutshell. I guess I wouldn't be so attached to my sports teams if I lived in a city where it was always 85 degrees and was right on the water. But as a Boston fan, especially, and watching them go against the Heat all those years, especially rubbed me the wrong way. So Miami's my number two.
How do consistent LeBron fans fit into this list who aren't necessarily attached to cities? Like, I don't know, someone who does, like, is involved in this podcast, probably.
John, I didn't know you were a friend. LeBron friend. asking for a friend. if you're consistent, like, if you supported LeBron back in the thin days, the Anderson Varejao days.
The big Z days,
exactly. Then I'm with you.
Okay, sweet.
All right, let's finish up with our number ones.
All right, so my number one was Columbus, Ohio. Ooh. Actually, yeah, plot twist here. Put South Bend in my top four. I'm putting Columbus in my number one, which I think might be either treasonous or heretical or both. Yeah, it's just one of those things where I have been, as an Ohio State fan, a lifelong Ohio State fan, I've had more pleasurable experiences going to Michigan games up in Ann Arbor, sitting with Michigan fans, than I have sitting next to awful Ohio State fans in Columbus. And I think kind of actually probably all sports fans can probably see where I'm coming from a little bit. Every franchise has obnoxious fans. I think Ohio State fans kind of just shine through a little bit more than a lot of other teams.
Wow.
Yeah, there's some integrity there.
This is also a direct affront to me, considering I am a Columbus resident now.
That's true. I mean, and when, like, you know, the Columbus crew can, like, you know, get outsold by a smaller market USL team in Cincinnati on a consistent basis, I think kind of goes to show how supportive they are of their teams.
I think we need to add FC Cincinnati to the bingo. Get them their own box.
We should, please. And then I'll start making side bets.
So in contrast to the stark integrity Cooper displayed, I am going to continue on my journey south and plant my flag on the worst sports city in the city of Los Angeles. It's just, they're terrible. I detest the Dodgers, so we'll just do this right now. I detest the Dodgers. I detest USC. I do not think that UCLA's uniforms look cool. Their blue is gross.
Hold on, time out.
And their gold
those
is not
uniforms
gold.
Are dope. No.
Oh, they're not. They're no. not. Get over yourself, Cooper. Check your privilege. All right.
first ever on this podcast. Wow.
Yeah.
I did not
first ever.
That. Wow. But I did not think it would come from John.
I mean, teams flee that city because nobody there cares about their sports teams. Like, there's so many other things that they care about more. There aren't devoted LA Rams fans. There aren't devoted Los Angeles Angels fans. I mean, there probably are. But, you know, the Clippers are a great example, too, where they're a team that's there that people don't support and they don't. Like, if Steve Ballmer wasn't, you know, sitting there screaming his lungs out every game and turning red in the face, you know, there might not even be a franchise in LA for the Clippers. They might have moved to, I don't know, back to Seattle or to some other city. And I think LA is one of those cities that chronically underappreciates their sports teams and don't deserve all the teams they have. I would rather have four basketball teams three basketball teams and four baseball teams in the city of Chicago than to have all these teams in LA.
What?
I think Chicago's a great sport.
No, wait, no, what does that even mean?
It means I would rather have the Angels and the Dodgers play along with the White Sox and the Cubs in Chicago. And I'd rather have the Clippers and the Lakers play alongside the Bulls in Chicago and have just this super saturated city that cares about its teams.
You do have so many
LA.
Suburbs in Chicago. I think it would work.
Yeah. You do, yeah.
You could put a team in Davenport, Iowa, and they could still call them mm-hmm. Chicago.
Yeah, you could.
Chicago Clippers.
Yeah.
The Valparaiso Lakers.
Anyway, I'll wrap up with my number one. This should come as no surprise. Given my Boston sports fandom, it's New York. And I think this is 90% driven by Yankees fans who, even though the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry has softened a little bit in the recent years, Yankees fans just still carry themselves. You're noticing a trend here. I don't like arrogant fan bases, which is maybe me deflecting. But for the longest time, Boston sports fans couldn't be arrogant. So anyway, Yankees fans will find every occasion to throw their 27 rings in your face. They're just loud and boorish and then the Giants, too, I guess, are the other team that drives this for me because they were the foil to my Patriots in a couple of Super Bowls, painful losses. Other than that, I actually, like, I kind of feel sorry for Mets fans a lot of the time. Same with the Knicks, but Yankees fans and Giants fans are enough to do it for me. So that's my number one. And we will move on now to our last segment, which we end every episode with. And we'll try to keep this short because we know we've run a little long this week. So, Cooper, who is your waste of data this week?
Yeah, so Jeff, you can find me later, but I'm deciding to I'm going to completely abandon all rules that we have on this segment, as I have the past couple of weeks, because I want to stay positive. So I think Tack McKinley, I don't know. Maybe Twitter did blow him up for his speech at the draft. I'm sure there was someone on Twitter who did. Not going there. Anyways, so I think Tack's speech I think was very moving. It was kind of one of those – it's what actually makes the draft kind of cool is these kids, like their dreams coming true. I thought his story – if you haven't gotten a chance to, I would read up on his story. Very inspirational. His mom left him when he was 5. He never knew his dad, so he was raised by his grandma. And she had to like collect bottles, like aluminum cans, water bottles to pay rent. He was initially committed to Cal, and he overslept on his first visit there because that was the first time he had like slept in a mattress for a really long time. And so he was just enjoying his sleep, and he overslept his visit. And because of grades, he couldn't go to Cal, and so he went to junior college and worked his way to UCLA. And now he's drafted by the Falcons, and I hope he has an awesome career because I mean that journey is pretty amazing, and it's what makes the draft really special.
Well put, and I agree. Let's try to be positive this week. I have a positive waste of data as well, John, but do you want to go first?
Sure, yeah, and mine is kind of positive. I think this is something we've talked about on the podcast before, but a former NFL linebacker came out this week and said that the way to improve safety in the NFL is to would be to remove helmets, to take away that feeling of invulnerability and invincibility that comes with wearing all this padding and stuff. And I think that's the right thing to do. I think that if we want football to perpetuate, we need to seriously consider changing the game. It's an inherently violent sport, and we're not going to fix things by having referees blow their whistles more. We need to change how players approach the game. And I think this is a great statement. And I think this is something that we've all talked about and we've all think is not a bad idea to deal with moving forward. So I'd like to highlight that.
All right. And to close it out, my waste of data is also a positive one. T.Y. Hilton, wide receiver for the Indianapolis Colts, put out a video on Twitter over the weekend of his 4-year-old son just absolutely exposing some poor kid in flag football with the most devastating, like, step back, let the kid run through and trip over himself. And the kid is 4, which is just pretty remarkable. So it was a great video. If you haven't had the chance to watch it yet, just go on Twitter or all over the internet. It really was. It was pretty great to see. The kid's like switching hands with the football and stuff. And
he's draft eligible next year, right? I would love to throw him into my mock. So that'll be like, what, 2030 something?
He's a little undersized, so maybe he projects like mid-second round.
All right, I'm going to pencil that one in.
Nah, there you go. You heard it here first, guys. All right, that's the show for the week. Thank you guys for tuning in yet again. We really appreciate you listening. We appreciate you leaving us a review if you haven't done that yet. You can find us on iTunes at our iTunes page. You can also leave us your thoughts on any of our social media sites that we mentioned there at the beginning of the show. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your suggestions, your thoughts. Again, I want to thank you for listening. It's been fun for us. We hope it's been fun for you too. And we'll be back next week in the same time and the same place.
Dope.